This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal and shop authentic handbags, watches, sneakers, streetwear, and jewelry from eBay, backed by Authenticity Guarantee. Visit eBay.com for terms.
And I don't know if it's Vader Meinhof frequency illusion or what, but ever since I heard him
what
say it. Vader Meinhof frequency illusion is like when you hear.
It's like, I don't think she's speaking English
anymore.
No,
it's real. It's science.
Hello, and welcome to a mailbag edition of Dinner SOS. I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious. We get a lot of questions in our inbox, and we can't always give everyone the full episode treatment. So today, I am joined by my colleague Kendra Vaculin to help dig into some of your smaller, but no less important, dinner emergencies. Hi, Kendra.
Hi, Chris.
All right. We're getting into it. We're just going to start.
It's 0 to 60.
Mailbag day. Okay. Kendra, kick us off with this question from Kate.
Of course. She says, I love a great craft cocktail, and I've been playing around with them at home to pretty good success. I make a mean Sazerac. I love the classics and twists on them. I love playing with foams. Oh, my God. Like salt air on my margaritas. She says, thank you, Jose Andres. And mixing in interesting flavors like passion fruit and chilies. Lately, I've been using Amaro and Vermouth in my Manhattans, and it's a revelation. Here's my problem. I really love getting creative when it's just me and my husband, but when we start inviting friends over, I feel like, one, my creativity comes off as weird and maybe intimidating, so we just end up drinking wine. Or two, my friends all want different cocktails, so I wind up playing bartender all night and not really enjoying my time. Can you recommend a batch cocktail that I could make ahead and serve as the cocktail of the night? Or something that wows without having to reblend salt air every time someone wants a refill? I'm dying salt air.
Wow. So my idea of a cocktail, just so you're aware, Kendra, is like a glass of white wine with an ice cube in it.
Oh, cute.
That's Chris doing a cocktail.
Sure.
But yeah. What do you do?
Okay, so the things that I thought of first are the fact that she's now tapping into vermouth and Amaro's in her Manhattans tells me that she has those things. She's comfortable with those things. My go-to cocktail, like low ABV drinking for a dinner party cocktail, is an Americano, which is vermouth, Amaro, and soda. It is essentially like, it predates the Negroni, but it is a Negroni with soda instead of gin. Same thing is, you could do a Sbagliato, which is a Negroni with the sparkling wine.
This caused a bit of a stir,
it did.
Right? I feel like I heard this
Yes,
word.
And now I'm like embarrassed to order a Sbagliato at a restaurant because like I get this like knowing look from the server and I'm like, I did this before. Like I was here first. But these are great cocktails that you can pre-batch the Amaro and the vermouth portion and just leave the part that is bubbly, whether that's wine, like a Prosecco or a sparkling water, to be added a la minute, basically, and per person. I like to do a DIY bar of this where the vermouth and the Amaro is pre-batched in sort of a carafe or something, and people are pouring that over ice and topping with their soda or Prosecco to choice. Another, like, more, it sounds like she's into more spirit-forward drinks than I am. I love a long cocktail.
Yeah, something you can drink all yes. night, you know, drink several of them.
Totally. I'm all about quantity. But I think something that my partner makes a lot and will batch for parties is a Last Word, which is in the classic cocktail space, but a little bit different and one that maybe people haven't had. And it might require that you have to go out and buy some chartreuse. But it is a fun one and it looks cute and it's nice to have.
What is that one?
Okay, so it's gin, chartreuse, maraschino liqueur, and lime. It's really cute. It's like a nice color.
Yeah.
And this is an easy one to batch ahead of time. And you can put it out in your cute little coops or Nicanors or whatever you have it out for your party.
Is there any kind of rule of thumb in terms of what drinks you can batch and for how long?
Yeah. Drinks that usually would be shaken, you have to put a little bit of water into your batching because the dilution that happens during like a cocktail being shaken with ice, you have to mimic that in your pre-batching.
Right.
So for example, when people batch a martini ahead of time, you have to add a little bit of water to your mixture and then refrigerate that mixture like all together before you dole it out because you're not going to be getting that slight tiny dilution that you would get from the shaking. So I think anything that's like entirely spirit, anything that's like entirely spirit plus like a juice is readily batchable. And like margaritas are batchable if you wanted to go that route.
I wouldn't leave them for like overnight.
For sure. Yeah. With this
citrus,
with
juice
citrus.
Does some funny things.
Yeah. I think it's like right ahead of your party if you make a big batch. I have friends who always make mezcal Negronis in a huge bucket. And then that's like part of the party is you're like, you know, ladling out yourself some mezcal Negroni. But again, that's like 100% spirit. So that's an easy one to do. Mm. Again, I love a soda in a cocktail. I love something sparkly. So usually I'll batch everything less the seltzer and then have that happen as you drink.
Don't get me wrong. I love cocktails. Love the flavors. Mm. They're like the depth and concentration and expressions of flavor that are possible when carried on the back often, you know, of like alcohol, you mm-hmm. know, I find like just wildly seductive and compelling, but I can't drink that much of them.
Yeah.
It just puts me in a bad place. You know, I just got to stick to my like white wine with an ice cube.
I think that's okay. Oh, the one I did want to call out because we've been talking about it actually a bunch on staff recently. Hazel from our art department raised this cocktail as something we should cover. The Carajillo is this cocktail that it's like espresso martini goes cooler, if you can even believe it.
What?
It's like, it's a coffee drink, but it's made with this liqueur. It's called Liquor 43, L-I-C-O-R 43.
Oh.
Okay. And it's this sort of like spiced vanilla-y liqueur. And so coffee and that together makes this like incredible drink. And I think as an after dinner cocktail at a party, that could be a really, really fun move and would save you the hassle of having to like pull a bunch of espresso shots or whatever you would need to do to make an espresso martini.
Because you could use just cold brew concentrate
exactly.
or something.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. We're going to move on. Listener Amanda writes, I have a bit of a ridiculous question, but I thought you might be the right people to ask. I'm going to take that as a compliment.
Uh-oh.
I am looking for a dessert that me and my partner can eat together, but we have some restrictions. I can't eat sugar. I get horrible migraines. And I also avoid dairy and gluten, but I do eat butter. I can eat fruit, honey, agave, coconut sugar in small quantities, but processed sugar really messes me up. My partner is also allergic to all nuts. Sesame is okay, and a lot of the GF baking alternatives use nuts, so it was just too much work to try to experiment to make desserts we could both eat.
Okay. Okay, I think you should do a mochi cake. I bet you that you
can you use all mochi flour?
Yeah, that's what I do.
100%?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you have to use honey instead or agave or some sort of
you can use an
sweetener.
Invert sugar?
I think so. This is my feeling.
Results not guaranteed.
Results not guaranteed.
But we're okay.
I think
we're
you
having
should
a conversation.
Do a mochi cake using a liquid sweetener, and then you can top it with like fruit.
And eggs are okay.
Eggs are okay.
So that's going to give you so much of the structure that you need in terms of like the mochi cake.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really good about that.
Yeah.
Because you could also use coconut milk
yes.
as like your liquid
yes.
in the mochi cake.
Yes, and butter mochi cake is butter and coconut milk.
Yes.
And you can have butter. Those are the fats.
Guaranteed. We're just going to like put a stamp on that one.
What about, so last summer I developed a recipe for a strawberry ice cream pie where you like blitz pretzels and you make like a pressing crust out of it. So what if you use like a gluten-free cookie of your choice and made a pressing crust with that? And then, and it's just butter and the cookie, and that's your pressing crust. And then you use a dairy-free ice cream, not nut-based, but like there's some nice coconut milk or oat milk-based dairy-free ice creams, and that can be your ice cream layer, and then you just put fruit on top.
Love it. Love it. I'm like, everything I'm going to literally has nuts everywhere.
Yeah. There's lots of nuts.
Break. My fridge fudge from some years ago.
Oh, yeah, your fridge fudge with avocado.
But there's almond butter in there.
Oh. What about tahini?
Maybe with tahini. Okay, we're back. Okay, fridge fudge from Healthy-ish from 2019, but with tahini.
Mm.
Yes.
I think that could
work. I like it. Even the healthy-ish chocolate brownies with tahini as well, while we're on the subject, because you use some cornstarch, cocoa powder as your dry ingredients.
Mm.
Eggs, sure, but it's otherwise gluten-free. And then your swirl is tahini. There is some sugar in there, though. But maybe it would be okay if you subbed honey.
Slash coconut sugar in a small
slash quantity. Coconut sugar. Okay.
Wow. Okay, I'm thinking the yogurt story that's coming out soon.
Yes, the popsicles.
The popsicles, which are yogurt and fruit. If
yes,
you did
popsicles.
Yeah, if you did a dairy-free but not nut-based yogurt, like Anita's coconut yogurt or Coco June. Mm-hmm. I love the coconut-based yogurts. I think they're the best. But there's also like soy milk-based yogurts and oat milk-based yogurts. If you did that as your base, then you like macerate your fruit but with honey. And then swirl the fruit through the yogurt and then freeze them as pops. I think that could be effective.
I love that. I think popsicles are a wonderful direction, just in general.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of crazy shit and then freeze it.
Yeah.
And be really happy about it.
Totally. And you don't need sugar. You would,
don't
want it to be liquid anyway, so you'd probably be making a syrup no matter what.
You'd be very happy to have like a liquid sweetener in there.
Totally. Okay, I think we've
done
it.
I hope we helped.
Yeah.
I hope we did no harm at the very least. We're going to take a short break. When we're back, we'll tackle some more of your questions.
Hi there. I'm Deb Perlman, creator and mastermind behind Smitten Kitchen and the author of 3 cookbooks.
And I'm Kenji Lopez-Alt. You might know me from Serious Eats, The Food Lab, and The Wok.
We're both professional home cooks, which means that we create and test recipes, obsessing over them until they're just right.
And on our new podcast, The Recipe with Kenji and Deb, we'll share our techniques and ingredients so that you can learn everything you need to create your own perfect recipes.
From Radiotopia, from PRX.
It's The Recipe
with Kenji and Deb.
Out now on your favorite podcast platform.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I think when we're stressed, it makes it harder for us to even think about engaging in relationship building and friendship building. So when I think about, you know, myself, I think, oh, having a little bit more of a balanced mind, having a little bit more of a calm mind is going to make me that much more likely to open myself up to others. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What is the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/dinnersos today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dinnersos.
Okay, I'm going to read you our next question from Leah. Leah says, my spouse, Caleb, and I recently moved from our own space in Michigan to a shared house in San Francisco. The roommate culture, not to mention being able to pay rent, is amazing, but sharing a kitchen is somehow more intimate and complicated than sharing a bathroom. We find ourselves often crunched for time and space to cook. And since we both love to cook, it's something we need to adjust to. Can you suggest any recipes that are suited for a shared kitchen situation, whether that means quick prep and cleanup, one burner wonders, and or minimally obtrusive household smells?
Okay.
Okay. This is so brave of you to move from your own space into a shared kitchen space. I think I could only have moved in the other direction from a shared space to my own space, and moving back would be a really tough beat for me. But I admire your love of the sort of collaborative living situation. In terms of ways to minimize your impact in the kitchen, I do think what you could do is watch the episodes of Top Chef where they all have to share like a vacation home kitchen. Not to be whatever, but this was last week on Top Chef. They all like went to like a Vrbo house and like had to all cook dinner together
in
one kitchen.
We're definitely not calling that VRBO.
Sorry. I hate to be the one to tell you this.
You always manage to correct my pronunciation of things that I'm hopelessly out of
it's
touch
true,
on.
It's true,
so
I do that.
Just,
and I would have
cool
called it VRBO, but they just said it on Bravo the other night, and that's okay. How I know. But when watching them do this, you really see like how to best execute a meal when, you know, 12 people are trying to cook on the same 5 burners. Obviously, you don't need us to tell you that uncooked or plug-in appliance-based cooking is the easiest because you're not going to be fighting over burner space or oven space. But one-burner moments are obviously ideal. So I think there's a really fun pasta on the site that is, it was a Allie Slagle recipe that was in the magazine a while back when we did a takeover from her book, I Dream of Dinner. And the recipe is of a one-pot puttanesca where you use tiny pasta like ditalini, and that cooks directly in the sauce that you're making. So you don't have to have a separate burner going with a pot of boiling water to cook your pasta. You just dump the pasta directly in your Dutch oven or what have you, where you're cooking like the capers and the tomato and all the other components. And so I think that's a really good one burner moment. The other thing, and this is taken directly from that Top Chef episode, is slow cooking. One guy cooked like slow cooked lamb on like a low, low heat overnight. I'm not advocating that you keep your oven on overnight, but something that can happen during the day, like if somebody works from home and can be at home at the same time and slow cook something, that way when dinner time rolls around and everybody's angling for the kitchen space, you're done. The slow braise of your choose your meat of choice is completed. And you can be chopping up some red onion and herb and whatever that you want to put on top at the end, make some rice in a rice cooker and call it a day without having to fight over stove or oven.
Yeah, my brain went to a just like minimize the amount of time you are standing at the stove or need to stand at the stove. And to that end, like you just mentioned a rice cooker. So like a plug-in rice cooker can do a lot for you because you can not only cook rice in it, but you could cook grains. You can even, you know, throw a piece of fish in there on top of like the rice that you've cooked and let it steam through to doneness, you know, if you truly did not have access to the stovetop one night.
I think allowing yourself one burner is smart, you know, from a philosophical approach. And things that, like, don't require just a lot of time at the stove. So thinking about things like you're not so much doing soup, you're doing stir fry, you know, with, like, your rice kind of ready to go on the side. You can do a little bit of your ingredient prep elsewhere. You know, you don't necessarily have to cut a pepper, you know, in the kitchen in order to have a validating, like, cooking experience. You know, you could kind of, you could move around and not feel like you have to just be, like, standing over the stove, and the cooking process can play out very quickly. I was, like, trying to put myself in the headspace of this. And, like, honestly, at home, I have, like, an alarmingly tiny cooktop in Philly.
Really?
It's like, it's a tiny little, like, it's a quote European style kitchen.
Ah, sure. It's like, your fridge dinky too?
The fridge, conversely, is enormous. We bought it from somebody who, you know, like, only really had, like, charcuterie and champagne in
there.
Sure,
okay.
Nothing got cooked in that kitchen. So we have this funny little Miele cooktop. You can't put more than two skillets on it.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
You're like, so every night I'm sort of like, what am I gonna do? My oven is, like, not full-on easy bake oven, but it's can't fit a half sheet in there.
Wow.
It's quarter sheet only.
Chris, wow.
No, I know.
The stars, they live just like us.
Yes. Oh, I'm, like, more like you than you even would imagine.
Also, I would say, pending outdoor space availability and always changing Bay Area weather, I would say grilling, especially as it becomes summer months, might be a move for you. It'll just evacuate you entirely out of the kitchen, and then you can look up recipes where everything that you're doing happens on the grill, so you don't need to venture into the kitchen at all.
Yeah, I think everybody should own an induction burner that they're able to, you know, either move around within the kitchen if you just need, like, a little auxiliary cooking space, or to just keep a pot of soup warm or something like that. Or you can take it outside. And, like, rather than the mishigas of, like, oh, charcoal or gas or the propane cylinder is empty, you got your burner, you're outdoors.
Wow.
You know?
Are you advocating for, like, a very long extension cord?
Just a long extension cord. I mean, okay. Like, you know, if only every problem could be solved that easily.
Yeah, that's
just
true.
With an extension cord.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So our next listener question is from Courtney, and she left a voicemail. So let's hear it.
I have a question about chicken stock and stocks in general. I have always been told that to make a good stock, you put in bones, a little bit of vegetables, let it boil and simmer for a very long time. But I've never gotten an exact answer on how to tailor stock for specific dishes, or even the best kind of stock to make. I started recently adding a ton of vegetables, all the scraps that I've stuffed into the freezer to make stock with, and it makes a very flavorful stock, but I don't know how to tell if I'm doing the right thing. Is it better to have stock with just bones, minimal other flavors, or is it better to throw in all the vegetables and make it a standalone ingredient?
A beautiful, infinitely complex question with infinite answers.
Mm-hmm.
But this one really, piques my sort of, like, curiosity in terms of, like, what types of dishes she makes, right? Normally, what I would say is standard thinking would be keep your stock relatively neutral in flavor to the extent that you want it to be versatile in terms of how you use it. But to my mind, you can include tons of vegetables in a stock and not make it divisive in any way or create an issue later on in terms of, oh, well, I put a little bit of tomato scrap in this and now it's simply not going to work. Or I put too many carrots, I put too much onion. You can, in the vegetable world, you can get away with quite a lot before they will show up in a dish later on and, you know, have you saying, oh my gosh, well, if only I hadn't put so much carrot in the stock.
Mm-hmm.
Where you do need to be a little bit more careful is around, you know, aromatics in the more, like, the spice world, and in terms of salt, and in terms of anything with heat, even, like, black pepper, you know, potentially, if you used, like, so much of it. Star anise, cinnamon,
fresh ginger. These are ingredients that could be wonderful depending on the nature of the preparation you're using that stock for later on, or they might show up and be very unwelcome. You know, if you were just trying to make just like, I don't know, you know, just like chicken cacciatore, it might feel weird if there was star anise flavor, that kind of like licorice-y note hanging out in there. Actually, it doesn't even sound that bad to me.
I think it'd be good, yeah.
That would probably be good. That's a bad example. That would be freaking genius. but I'm sure we could come up with something stupid.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. Also, what you said about salt, I tend to try to not season my stocks with salt at all. And like, let them be just the vegetables and the meats and the bones, and that's it. And then the salt component is where I can, as you said, tailor or angle my stock, as much stock as I need from the whole pot towards the dish that I'm trying to make ultimately. So maybe that means soy sauce as an inclusion down the line, or fish sauce, or Worcestershire, or miso. Basically, any salty ingredients that I want to add in, I will do that after the stock is completed with just, you know, the 4 cups that I need for my whatever it is. And then I'll season to taste with those added ingredients that might feel a little bit more specific. And then I'll have the leftover stock unseasoned to use however I wish.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes it simply depends how much work do you want to do later on? You know, to what degree are you going to transform that stock into something completely different? You know, like braise meat in it, like a pot roast or something, right? Or to what degree do you want that stock to like almost be good to go? Like just drop an egg in there and make, you know, kind of like a egg drop soup, or drop a few, you know, vegetables in there and sort of call it a day. But yeah, I think just doing the work of making stock for yourself is like already phenomenal, you know, in terms of taking such full advantage of, you know, not just meat and bones and scraps of that sort, but of your vegetables as well. I mean, there's just nothing like it. And frankly, it just means there's less work to be done later on, no matter what you decide to do with it.
I think your impulse to be keeping all those scraps in your freezer for your big stock moment is 100% right. I have a big bag with a label that says for stock and all my weird miscellaneous chicken bones and half onions that are almost at the end of their lives go into my freezer for stock bag, and then everything gets dumped into the pot. I agree with Chris that I don't think there's really anything you could do vegetable-wise that would take your stock too far in a direction that you feel like it limits its use cases down the
Occasionally
line.
Occasionally fennel.
Oh, fennel.
Fennel, I, you know, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I want you. I see you. I love you. Sometimes I'm like, oh,
not
it's
that.
Like too much.
See, I love fennel so much that I never have any leftover, like, to put in my stock bag because I just eat it constantly. I love it so much.
We're going to take one more break. When we get back, one last question, and it's beefy.
Tell me about your mama's kitchen.
This teeny tiny little room was where we did everything. We grew up there. We became teenagers, adults in that small space.
I'm Michelle Norris. The kitchen is usually the heartbeat of our homes. It's the place where we're nourished physically and spiritually. It's where the people we love most chased away life's furies with skillets and spatulas.
I love you. I really care about you. Those words don't come naturally. But what you can do is hand someone a corned beef sandwich that's the size of your head, and that means the same thing.
Every week, I'm serving up a new episode of this Audible original podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. They're available anywhere you listen.
Okay, Kendra, we've got one last question. Do you want to read it for us?
Okay, this is from Savannah. I need help. This is in all caps. All the beef I make tastes like pot roast, and it is driving me crazy. I do not understand what I am doing wrong. I don't make beef a lot, but when I make any sort of shredded beef / cubed beef dish at home, to me, it just all tastes like pot roast. I've tried different cooking methods, cuts of meat, and recipes, so I think the problem is me. Any tips or recipes you could shoot my way would be great. Thanks.
Okay, Kendra, do you think when she says a shredded beef or cubed beef dish, shredded beef meaning just kind of braised to tenderness and sort of pulled apart,
correct?
Like sort of ropa vieja or something. Whereas like cubed beef meaning like a cube steak.
I think she means like chuck roast that you cut into cubes before
beef
you
stew.
Braise it into beef stew. Yeah.
Okay. Is pot roast delicious?
Yes.
It is, right?
Yes.
Isn't pot roast just delicious?
Yes.
So many different thoughts happening here. Okay, one, you know, I'd love to offer an alternative theory that Savannah is quietly killing it and making everything taste full-on delicious and super rich and satisfying. And she's coaxing greatness out of even the most humble cuts of chuck.
Yeah.
But that said, here's the thing, like, beef is a very strong flavor. And not in the way that lamb is. Lamb has that grassy kind of high note that kind of, like, pervades to one degree or another, depending on, you know, the specifics of the animal and where it was raised. Beef, it's beefy. I mean, it's, like, it's very bovine. It's very animal. It's earthy. It's rank. It's funky, but it's, like, satisfying. It's primal. I mean, it's all of these things, right? But it takes a certain amount of flavor to get beyond that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, you just did beef stew.
Yes.
But as, like, meatball
soup. As meatballs, yes. And so that was what I was going to ask, is, like, though you're trying different recipes, is the central flavor thrust red wine and onions and garlic and, like, a woodsy herb in, like, maybe mushrooms or carrots or, like, whatever? And if that's the case, then it makes sense that you feel that ultimately you're ending with the same thing. And so my suggestion would be to go in a completely different flavor direction.
Right, exactly.
I have developed a recipe that uses pork, but you could use a stewy beef in lieu of the pork and get a similar result, which is this, like, citrus braised number. It's got orange juice and soy sauce and ginger and mirin, a little bit of brown sugar and red pepper flakes. And I think you could give your beef that, like, orange beefy kind of flavor, and that with soy, and that would feel distinctly separate from pot roast world.
If you're looking for a way to bridge out of pot roast but not leave it behind entirely, I fully agree with what Kendra was just saying. I think you need to sort of play up some flavors that put you out in front of that just sort of baseline beefiness, right? And I think one recipe that my brain went right to is from March 2019 from Soey Kim. It's the red wine and soy braised short ribs. Because it just showcases what soy can do in terms of it's giving you this, like, really rich and fulfilling kind of umami-packed experience, but it's giving you something very different from how pot roast gives it to you.
Yeah.
But it still has the red wine, which is unconventional. And that was the whole thing about Soey's approach. And this is a riff on Kalbi Jim, in this very kind of celebratory Korean dish in which you would not normally find red wine. But she's kind of bridging that gap. And I think it's fascinating how it kind of can sit across both worlds.
Totally.
But yeah, I would look to those things. Hannah just did the oyster sauce braised brisket.
Yeah, yum.
Big yum. Big.
So good.
Biggest yum.
I was also thinking, like, a big, like, go all the way towards tomato. Like, if it was really, like a ragu type of vibe, but with your beef. Like, could you make something that you would want to put on pasta and maybe, like, Calabrian chili? Like, do, like, some spicy tomato-y, brazy beef moment. And you could even keep wine in there too, and that that could feel distinct from pot roast.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. That's a great one.
You know what else? Here's what you Google. Ready? You Google Bon Appetit, coconut and lemongrass braised short ribs. These are so good. And it might not be the usual cut of beef that you're working with, but it's worth it to branch out, I think, and try some other. You said you've tried other cuts of beef potentially in your experimentation. You've tried short ribs. These ones are so good. They're bone in and with the coconut milk, a little bit of fish sauce, a little bit of lime. There's turmeric in there. There's some Thai chilies. This is so good, such that our coworker Z like asks pretty much monthly for Rachel to make this for her.
Just for fun.
Just all the time. When it was her birthday, they were like, you really got to do it now. Like, it's so delicious. And this is definitely, like, texturally giving you beef stew in that it's, like, thick and stewy and homey and you want it over rice and the beef is shreddy, but it is nowhere in the same neighborhood flavor-wise.
Yeah. Well, and that gave me the thought, well, you know, maybe we don't even braise it at all.
Maybe,
my brain went to this recipe I did years ago from 2016.
Ooh,
gosh, that's
TBT.
A shocking amount of time. Coconut marinated short rib kebabs with peanut chili oil. Marinating short rib in coconut milk and aromatics, and then just grilling it.
Wow.
I mean, you almost by default can't be in the pot roast space,
yeah.
You know, when you're just kind of like straight up grilling, you know, short rib like that.
Totally. And this chili oil with peanuts, I consider myself like a pretty good historian of the site. And I've never seen this recipe before in my life.
It bums me out, you know, because this was a really strong kind of like how to be a better skewer maker. You know, this is a whole package about skewers. And just like, you know, generally speaking, don't mix your meat and your veg, you know, put all of one thing on one skewer and just control for how that wants to be cooked rather than all just splitting the difference and putting a whole bunch of stuff on there. So there's some fun takeaways here. But also, you know, just some of these like things that we normally think of as braising cuts, like chuck, but like honestly, short rib isn't that much more than chuck, and wow, is it even more flavorful.
Yeah.
You know, if you give it like a really nice marinade with a gentle kind of tenderizing effect like coconut milk, oh wow, the way it grills up, it will change your life. I need you to write back, Savannah, try one of these things, and will you get back to us? Because like now we're involved, we're invested, and we need to know.
We're
literally going to stand by.
We'll never leave the podcast studio until we hear back from you.
We'll do some other things in the interim, but like we're standing by just generally speaking.
If you have a dinner emergency or just a quick question, write to us at dinnersos@bonappetit.com. Or leave us a voice message at 212-286-SOS1. That's 212-286-7071. You can find the recipes featured on today's episode, plus the rest of the Bon Appetit recipe archive on the new Epicurious app, brought to you by Condé Nast. Just search Epicurious in the App Store and download today. They're also linked in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice and hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. Dinner SOS is a Condé Nast Entertainment original podcast. I'm your host, Chris Morocco. My co-host this week is Kendra Vaculin. Our producer is Michelle O'Brien. Peyton Hayes is our associate producer. Leah Kasher is our assistant producer. Jake Loomis is our engineer. Thanks to Jason Sill for production support.
I know,
I wasn't
I love
going
it.
Anywhere with that. I was just like, Kendra, I'm going to stall for time.
Until I think
for
of something.
2 minutes until Kendra like really kind of comes in hot here.
And I did think of something.
Hey, listeners, Chris Morocco here. If you find yourself in a dinner crisis, the Epicurious app comes to the rescue. Not only will you unlock over 50,000 recipes from Bon Appetit and Epicurious, but you'll also receive daily personalized recommendations based on your unique preferences and dietary needs. Head to the Apple App Store and download the Epicurious app to kickstart your 7-day free trial today. Don't miss out on this culinary adventure. Start your free trial and let the Epicurious app be your kitchen hero. Happy cooking.